Chapter 41. Naomi. Naomi lifted the handles of the resistance machine over her head, then let them slowly down. Sarta sat on the box of resistance gel and watched her like someone a little bored at a zoo. Naomi didn't care. They didn't talk. For every purpose but the ones that mattered most, Naomi was alone. The trick, she'd decided, was not to remove just one EVA suit, but all of them. Corrupt the data, and no one would know whether she'd taken something or not. But if she only broke the inventory for the suits, that would be telling, too. She lifted the handles. The muscles in her arms and shoulders ached. She let the handles down, savoring the pain. If she could get one of the scanners she'd used before, she might be able to feed false data into the system. Fill it with a few thousand phantoms. A million EVA suits filling every square centimeter of the ship. Then, even if she couldn't erase the data, she could render it useless. The problem was the warning, Claxton sounded. Naomi's heart sank into her belly. They were preparing to go to freefall. She was out of time. She wasn't ready. Outside the ship right now, the umbilical was still in place. As soon as it had been hauled in, the Pella and the Chetsmuka would peel apart, and all her fragile hopes would die. She let the handles drop. The cable pulled them back into place, ready for the next person. She wasn't ready. She wasn't going to be ready. It didn't mean she wouldn't try. She walked the few steps to the resistance gel and nodded at the guard. Going to the head. Just been, you. Going again, she said, turning away. Hell you are! Hey! Naomi pretended to ignore the woman, listening as she scrambled down to come after her. She'd been a model prisoner up to now, and the defiance took Sarta by surprise. Well, it was meant to. The warning sounded again, and the count. 0G in 3. 2. Naomi put both hands on the doorframe. 1. Up and down vanished, and she pulled her body into a tight curl and exploded out towards Sarta. Both her feet hit the guard in the belly, sending her back through the wide, empty air of the room. She grabbed Naomi's left shoe, prying it off as she spun away. It would take her seconds to reach the other side of the room and something to push against. That was her head start. Sarta was already shouting. Naomi flipped herself through the hatch, then down the hall, too fast for safety. She had minutes. She had less than minutes. Had she really thought she could pry open a locker, pull on a suit, and cycle the airlock? The math had worked at the time. She couldn't imagine it now. Sarta was somewhere behind her, shouting, raising the alarm, but Naomi was already around the corner. With sight lines broken, Sarta would have to guess where she'd gone. With luck, it would buy her a few more seconds. She only needed seconds. She only had them. The crew airlock was closed. She cycled the inner door open, then started pulling at lockers. If someone, anyone, had slipped up, left one unlocked. The metal clanked and rattled under her fingertips as she tugged and tugged and tugged. Was the umbilical unhooked yet? Were they pulling it in? It seemed like they must be. There were voices raised from down the hallway, men and women shouting. One of them was Sarta. Another one was Sin. She felt herself sobbing and ignored it. She couldn't fail. She couldn't. Not this time. Not now. For a sickening second, she didn't feel the decompression kit at her waist. She slapped the place where it had been pressed against her skin, and it was there. If she could just get a suit. She tried another locker. Her heart skipped as it opened. A simple EVA suit hung there, suspended in the null G by thin bands of elastic. She reached for it. She stopped. They'll know the suit is missing, a small voice said in the back of her mind. They'll know where you've gone. They'll come after you. Her breath was heavy and fast, her heart racing. The thing she'd been trying not to think for the last hours came to the front of her mind like an old friend. Fewer than 50 meters. It isn't far. You can make it. She closed the locker. The inner door of the airlock was open now. She launched herself toward it, forcing herself to pant, to hyperoxygenate. She couldn't tell if the dizziness she felt was from too much oxygen or a kind of existential vertigo. She was really going to do this, naked in the void. She braced her palms against the outer door of the lock. She expected it to be cold. That it was the same temperature as any decking seemed wrong. 50 meters in hard vacuum. Maybe less. Maybe it was possible. She couldn't depressurize first. The long seconds matching the airlock to the outer nothingness would take more time than she had. She'd have to blow it out. Full pressure to nothing in a fraction of a second. If she held her breath, it would pop her lungs. She would have to blow herself empty first, let the void into her, all around her heart. Even if it worked, it would do her damage. She could handle that. The voices were loud and getting louder. Someone shouted, "Find the fucking bitch!" Sin sloped in past the lockers. His eyes widened. Sarta was behind him. Good, she thought. Perfect. Let them see. The indicator went from green to red under her thumb. Sin launched across the room with a wordless cry as the inner door started to close. For a moment, she thought, he wouldn't make it. But his hands caught the edge of the door and hauled himself through. She tried to push him back, but he forced his way through. The airlock door closed behind him, the magnetic seals clacking. Naomi held the handhold by the control panel, waiting for him to hit her, to kick, to put her in a chokehold. The lock was small enough he could put flat palms on both doors. She couldn't get away from him if he attacked. But he didn't. On the other side of the door, Sarta was shouting. Naomi thumbed the emergency override. 3 options appeared. Open ship door. Open outer door. Return to cycle.
Knuckles, no you hagas eso.
His hands were spread before him, wide and empty.
Bispian. Bispian, Alice.
What are you doing? Naomi said, surprised to hear the pain in her voice.
Why did you do that? Because you my people, yeah? We're belt. Born on the float. You, me, Alice la.
Tears were welling up in his eyes, waves sheeting over pupil and iris with no gravity to fight the surface tension.
We traveled so far, Vide. Once the promised land. And we go, all of us together, to Ime Alice.
You aren't saving me, she said. The big man crossed his arms.
Then I'm die trying. You're my people. We look out for each other. Take care. Not going to stand by while you die. Won't.
She should have been panting, forcing oxygen into her blood. She should have been flying across the emptiness. Sin floated, turning slowly clockwise a degree at a time, his lips pressed tight, daring her to deny him. Daring her not to see that she was loved here. That she had family here, that she belonged. Someone hit the inner door of the lock. The voices were louder, more numerous. Naomi knew she could open the door, but if she did, Sin wouldn't be the only one going out it. If he'd wanted to, he could have beaten her down by now. That he hadn't meant he'd chosen not to. Naomi's heart felt trapped between stones. She couldn't blow the door. She had to. She couldn't kill Sin. She couldn't save him. Whatever you do now, she thought, you will regret it forever. Seconds passed. Another voice, Philip on the other side of the airlock door. She could hear him shouting, telling her to open the door. He sounded frantic. How the hell did she keep getting into these situations?
Be strong, Sin said. For Filipito. Be strong.
Okay. She said. She pushed her jaw forward in a yawn, opening her throat and her eustachian tubes. Sin yelped as she hit open outer door. Air tugged at her once, hard as it evacuated. Adrenaline flooded her blood as she was assaulted invisibly on every square centimeter of flesh. The breath in her lungs rushed out of her, trying to pull her lungs along with it. Sin grabbed at the airlock frame to keep himself inside, spun, screaming, was gone. With her lungs empty, there was no reserve. She wasn't holding her breath, surviving off the gas held inside her. Someone could hold their breath for a couple minutes. In the vacuum, she could make it maybe 15 seconds unaided. 1001. Naomi shifted, hand over hand, to brace against the inner door and look out. The void was there. The great dome of stars. The Chetsmoka glowed in sunlight brighter than the earth had ever seen. The umbilical hung to her left, too bright to look at directly and more than halfway retracted. Her ribs ached. Her eyes ached. Her diaphragm tugged at her gut, trying to inflate lungs squeezed to knots. If she'd had an EVA suit, it would have had attitude thrusters. Without them, she had one chance, and no time to think about it. 1002. She launched. For a moment, she saw Sin in the corner of her eye, a flicker of pale movement. The sun was below her, vast and bright, radiant heat pressed against her throat and face. The Milky Way spread out, arching across the endless sky. Carbon dioxide built up in her blood. She could feel it in the burning drive to breathe. The Chetsmoka grew slowly larger. 1005. Shadows streaked its side, every protrusion and rivet cutting the sunlight into strips of darkness. Everything fell slightly out of focus as her eyes deformed. The stars shifted from diamond points of light to halos to clouds, like the whole universe dissolving. She'd thought it would be silent, but she heard her heartbeat like someone hammering in the next deck. If I die here, she thought, at least it's beautiful. This would be a lovely way to die. 1008. The lines of the Chetsmoka's airlock came clear enough to make out. Without magnetic boots, she'd have to reach it with bare handholds, but she was close. She was almost there. The world began to narrow, lights going out in her peripheral vision even as the bright ship grew larger. Passing out. She was passing out. She plucked the black thumb out of her belt, twisted it to expose the needle, and slammed it into her leg. 1010. A coldness spread through her, but the colors came back as the sip of hyperoxygenated blood poured through her. An extra bit of breath without having the luxury of breathing out first. The airlock indicator on the Chetsmoka's skin blinked. The emergency response received. The cycle starting. The ship loomed up. She was going to hit, and she couldn't afford to bounce. She put her hands out, fingers first, and prepared to crumple as she hit. There were handholds on the surface. Some were designed, but others were the protrusions of antennae and cameras. She hit with the same energy she'd kicked off with, the ship slamming into her. She'd known to expect that. She was ready. Her fingers closed on a handhold. The force of the body wrenched her shoulder and elbow, but she didn't lose her grip. 1013. Across the gap, the umbilical was in the Pella. Maneuvering thrusters lit along the warship's side, an ejection mass of superheated water glowing as it jetted out. Sin's body, he would have lost consciousness by now, was out there somewhere. But she couldn't see it. He was already lost. And at least Sarta and maybe others had seen them both. Sin and Naomi in the airlock without suits, and then gone. Spaced. Dead. Not dead yet. She had to get moving. Her mind had skipped a fraction of a second. She couldn't do that. Naomi pulled herself carefully, skimming along centimeters from the skin of the ship. Too fast, and she wouldn't be able to stop. Too slow, and she'd pass out before she reached safety. All she could do was hope there was a golden middle ground. 1000. She didn't know anymore. 15. Her whole body was a confusion of pain and animal panic. She couldn't make out the stars at all anymore. The Pella was a blur. The saliva in her mouth bubbled, boiled. A high, thin whine filled her ears, an illusion of sound where no sound was. A lot of things happen, she thought, vaguely aware she'd said it to someone else not long ago. Even this. She felt a wave of peace wash over her. Euphoria. It was a bad sign. The airlock was there, 5 meters away, then 4. Her mind skipped, and it was flashing past her. She shot out her arm, grabbing for it, and the frame hit her wrist. She clutched for it. snatching the way Sin had. She was spinning, the impact turning all her forward momentum angular. But she was over the airlock. Its pale mouth rose up from under her feet and vanished overhead, and back again, and back again. When she reached out, her hand was actually inside the ship, but she couldn't touch the frame, couldn't pull herself in. The Pella was drifting away, losing its color as her consciousness began to fade. So close. She'd come so very close. Centimeters more and she might have lived. But space was unforgiving. People died there all the time. The Pella loosed another plume from its maneuvering thrusters, as if in solemn agreement. Without thinking, she drew up her leg, the spin increasing as she bent tight. She pulled off the shoe that Sarta hadn't gotten. Her hands felt weird, clumsy, awkward, more than half numbed. When she stretched back out, the spin slowed to what it had been. She tried to judge the timing, but too little of her mind was left. In the end, she saw the Pella at the end of a distant and darkening hall, and threw the shoe at it as hard as her failing strength allowed. Ejection mass. The spin slowed. Her hands reached farther into the airlock. She was drifting in. Her heel hit the steel frame, and the pain was excruciating, and very far away. Her mind blinked. She had an impression of the airlock control panel, the lights trying to impart some critical information. She couldn't see the colors or the symbols on the pad. Her consciousness faded and was gone. Naomi woke herself up, coughing. The deck was pressing against her face. She couldn't tell if she was desperately weak or under high burn. The edges of the airlock around her were fuzzy. She coughed again, a deep, wet sound. Images of hemorrhaging lungs filled her mind, but the fluid she brought up was clear. Her hands were almost unrecognizable as hands. Her fingers were thick as sausages, her skin filled with plasma and fluid. Her skin was too hurt to touch, like a bad sunburn. Her joints ached from her toes to the vertebrae in her neck. Her belly felt like someone had kicked her in the gut a couple dozen times. She forced her breath. She could do that. Inhale, exhale. Something gurgled in her lungs. Not blood, though. She told herself it wasn't blood. She rolled onto her side, tucked her legs up, rose to sitting, and then lay back down again as the world swam. That was more than a G. That had to be more than a G. She couldn't be that weak, could she? The Chetsmoka hummed under her. She realized vaguely that she was hearing words, voices, a voice. She knew that didn't make sense, but she didn't know why. She pressed her hands to her face. A storm of emotions ran through her. Elation, grief, triumph, rage. Her brain wasn't working well enough yet to associate them with anything. They just happened. And she watched and waited and gathered her scattered self together. Her hands and feet started hurting, tortured nerve endings screaming at her. She ignored them. Pain was only pain, after all. She'd lived through worse. Next time, she made it to her feet. The little black thumb of the decompression kit was still lodged in her leg. She pulled it out, lifted it to shoulder high, and dropped it. It fell like maybe 1.5, 2G. That was nice. If she'd felt this bad at just 1G, she'd have been worried. She should probably have been worried anyway. She cycled the inner door open and stumbled out to the cheap locker room. The lockers hung open, EVA suits hanging in them or scattered on the floor. The air bottles were all gone. The voice, it was just one voice, but her ears seemed to have lost all their treble and left only an incomprehensible soup of bass tones, was familiar. She thought she should know it. She moved through the abandoned ship. She wondered how long she'd been unconscious, and if there was any way to know where she was, what heading she was on, and how fast she was already traveling. She reached a control panel and tried to access the navigation system, but it was locked down, as was the comm, the system status, the repair and diagnostics. She laid her forehead against the panel, more from exhaustion than despair. The direct contact of bone on ceramic changed the voice, sound conduction through contact, like pressing helmets together and shouting. She knew the voice. She knew the words. "This is Naomi Nagata of the Rocinante. If you get this message, please retransmit. Tell James Holden I am in distress. Calm is not responding. I have no nav control. Please retransmit." She chuckled, coughed up the clear fluid, spat it on the deck, and laughed again. The message was a lie, built by Marco to lure Jim to his death. Every bit of it was true.